This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Christmas Pig by J.K. Rowling, read by Amaka Okafor and an ensemble cast. To David. Part 1. Der Pig. Chapter 1. Der Pig. Der Pig was a small toy pig made of the same material as a soft towel. He had little plastic beans in his tummy, which made him fun to throw. His squishy trotters were exactly the right size to wipe away a tear. When his owner, Jack, was very young, he fell asleep every night sucking Der Pig's ear. Der Pig got his name because when Jack started to talk, he said, "Der Pig," instead of "the pig." When new, Der Pig had been salmony pink with shiny black plastic eyes, but Jack couldn't remember Der Pig looking like that. Der Pig had surely always been as he was now, greyish and faded, with one ear stiff from all the sucking. Der Pig's eyes fell out, leaving tiny holes in his face for a while. But then Jack's mum, who was a nurse, sewed little buttons in place of the missing plastic beads. When Jack came home from nursery that afternoon, Der Pig was lying on the kitchen table, wrapped up in a woolen scarf, waiting for Jack to take off the little bandage covering his eyes. Mum had even made Der Pig a set of medical notes. D.P. Jones, operation to attach buttons. Surgeon, Mum. After his eye operation, everyone started calling Der Pig D.P. for short. From the time he was 2 years old, Jack would never go to bed without D.P., which often caused problems, because when bedtime came, DP was usually nowhere to be found. Sometimes it took Mum and Dad a long time to find DP, who turned up in all kinds of places, hiding inside one of Dad's trainers or scrunched up in a flower pot.
"Why'd you keep hiding him, Jack?"
Mum asked every time she found DP curled up in a kitchen drawer or hidden beneath a sofa cushion. The answer was private, between Jack and DP. Jack knew DP liked cozy spaces where he could snuggle up and sleep. DP liked doing exactly the same things Jack did, crawling under bushes and into hidey holes and being thrown up in the air, Jack by his dad and DP by Jack. DP didn't mind getting dirty or being dropped accidentally in a puddle, as long as he and Jack were having fun together. Once, when Jack was 3, he put DP in the recycling bin. When he'd heard Mum say the bin was for recycling, Jack thought it had something to do with bike rides. So he waited for Mum to leave the kitchen, then dropped DP in there, imagining he'd have a little spin around when the lid was on. Mum laughed when Jack explained why he was peeking into the bin to try and catch the things moving. She explained that recycling meant something very different to going for a bike ride. All the things in the bin were going to be taken away and turned into other things, so they'd have a whole new life. Jack definitely didn't want DP to go away and be changed into something else, so he never put DP in the recycling bin again. All his adventures gave DP his interesting smell, which Jack liked very much. It was a mixture of the places DP had gone on his adventures, along with the warm, dark cave under Jack's blankets, and just a trace of Mum's perfume, because she always hugged and kissed DP too when she came to say goodnight to Jack. Every now and then, Mum would decide DP had got a bit too smelly and needed a good clean. The first time DP ever went in the washing machine, Jack had lain on the kitchen floor and screamed with rage and fear. Mum had tried to show Jack how much DP was enjoying swirling around in the washing machine, but it wasn't until DP was back in the cave under Jack's blankets that night, soft and dry and smelling of washing powder, that Jack really forgave Mum. He soon got used to DP going in the washing machine, but he always looked forward to DP returning to his natural smell. The very worst that ever happened to DP was when Jack was 4 and lost him at the beach. Dad had already packed up the towels and Mum was helping Jack back into his sweatshirt when Jack suddenly remembered burying DP somewhere, though he couldn't quite remember where. They searched until the sun was setting and the beach was almost empty, and Dad got really cross and Jack wailed and sobbed, but Mum kept telling him not to give up hope and digging all round with her hands. Then, just as Dad was saying they'd have to leave without DP, Jack dug his bare foot into the sand and his toes hit something squashy. Jack pulled DP out, sobbing with happiness, and Dad said that DP was never to come to the beach again, which Jack thought very unfair because DP loved sand, which was why Jack had buried him in the first place. Chapter 2. Mum and Dad. Shortly before Jack started school, a letter arrived telling all the parents that the children should bring their favourite cuddly toy with them on their first day. Everybody in Jack's class brought a teddy, but Jack, of course, brought DP. Each child took his or her turn to walk up to the front of the class and explain what their cuddly toy's name was and why they liked it. When it was Jack's turn, he explained why DP was called DP and about the operation on his eyes and about the day he got buried on the beach and was nearly lost forever. The stories of DP and his adventures made the class laugh, and when Jack finished talking, they all clapped. DP was easily the funniest and most interesting toy, even though he was one of the shabbiest. At playtime, Jack and a boy called Freddy played catch with DP. Just before the end of break, Jack dropped DP in a puddle. That night, DP had to go in the washing machine again. If Jack ever had a bad day at school, if he got a low mark or had an argument with Freddy, or if somebody made fun of Jack's wonky clay pot, DP was waiting at home to wipe away a tear with his small, squishy trotters. Whatever happened to Jack, DP was there, understanding and forgiving, and carrying with him that comforting smell of home, which always came back, no matter how often Mum washed it off. One night, soon after he'd started school, a noise woke Jack up. He felt for DP and drew him close in the dark. Somebody was shouting. The voice was a bit like Dad's. Then there was a crash and a lady screamed. It sounded like Mum, but not as Jack had ever heard her. Jack was scared. He listened for a few more moments, pressing DP against his mouth and nose, and he knew DP was scared too. Jack thought Mum and Dad might be fighting a burglar together. He knew the number you had to call for the police, so he got out of bed in the dark and crept out onto the landing. Still holding DP, he tiptoed downstairs. Dad was still yelling and Mum was still screaming. Jack couldn't hear the burglar's voice. Then the sitting room door banged open and Dad strode into the hall. He wasn't wearing his pajamas, but jeans and a jumper. Dad didn't notice Jack on the stairs. He opened the front door, walked out and slammed it behind him. Jack heard the noise of the car engine in the drive. Dad drove away. Jack crept into the sitting room. The lamp was on the floor and Mum was sitting on the sofa with her face in her hands, crying. When she heard Jack's footsteps, she looked up, startled, then cried harder than ever. Jack thought she'd explain everything and make it all better, but when he ran to her, she only hugged him very close, the way he held DP when he was hurt or sad. Chapter 3. Changes. Dad didn't live with them anymore after that. Mum and Dad explained to Jack separately that they didn't want to be married anymore. Jack told them he understood. He said that other people at school had mums and dads who didn't live together. He could tell that they needed him to be all right about it all, so he pretended he was. But some nights, after Mum had kissed him and closed the door, Jack cried into DP's limp body. DP knew and understood everything, without being told. He knew about the hard lump in Jack's chest. His trotters wiped away Jack's tears. Jack didn't have to pretend in the dark with DP. Soon after Jack's sixth birthday, Dad took Jack out for a burger, gave him a big box of Lego, and explained that he'd got a job abroad.
"I can talk to you all the time, though, Jack,"
said Dad.
"You can fly on an aeroplane to visit me. It'll be fun, won't it?"
Jack didn't think it sounded nearly as much fun as having a dad around to play with, but he didn't say that. Jack was getting used to not saying things. Next, Mum told him it might be a good idea if they moved to be closer to Gran and Grandpa, who could take care of Jack when she needed to work late. She had a new job at a big hospital, and Grandpa had found them a lovely house with a garden just two streets away from Gran and Grandpa's house. Gran and Grandpa owned a very naughty dog called Toby. Jack found Toby the dog funny.
"But will I have to leave school?"
asked Jack, thinking of his best friend Freddy.
"Yes,"
said Mum.
"But there's a school very near our new house. I know you'll love it."
"I don't think I will,"
said Jack. He didn't want to move and he didn't want a new school. Mum didn't seem to understand. Jack didn't want any more changes. He wanted to stay with his school friends and in the old house, where he and DP had had so many adventures. Gran and Grandpa talked to Jack on the phone. They told him how much they were looking forward to him and Mum coming to live near them, and what fun they'd have playing with Toby the dog in the park. So Jack said it was all right, but he didn't really mean it. The only person who seemed to understand was DP. Jack knew DP would miss all their favourite hiding places too. A few weeks after Mum had told Jack about the new house, Jack said goodbye to his teacher and Freddy. The next day, the removal men came and took away everything that made the old house look like home, and Mum drove Jack and DP 100 miles in their car. Jack had to admit the journey was fun. DP sat on Jack's lap, and Mum and Jack played I Spy and stopped for pizza and ice cream halfway. Mum let Jack buy 2 gobstoppers out of the gumball machine, one for him and one for DP, although, as Jack explained to Mum back in the car, he'd have to eat DP's for him. He hadn't expected to, but Jack liked the new house. His bedroom was next to Mum's, and there was a tall tree outside his window. Gran and Grandpa arrived 5 minutes after they did, with bags of food to fill up the fridge. The first thing Toby the dog did was to try and snatch DP out of Jack's hand.
"No, Toby, you know DP's mine,"
said Jack. He shoved DP down the front of his jumper to keep him safe, but with his head sticking out so DP could see what was going on. The removal men lifted all their familiar furniture into the house. Mum and Gran put away all the kitchen things, while Jack, Grandpa, Toby the dog and DP explored the garden. It had lots of interesting hiding places and excellent high perches for DP. But Jack kept him close because he didn't trust Toby the dog not to try and snatch him again. That night, Jack held DP in bed, breathing in his familiar comforting smell, and they silently agreed that moving day hadn't been nearly as bad as Jack had expected. There were no curtains on Jack's window yet, and DP and Jack watched the leaves fluttering against the darkening sky outside before they fell asleep. Chapter 4. Holly McCauley. When Monday arrived, Mum caught Jack trying to sneak DP into his school bag.
"No, Jack,"
she said gently.
"What if he got lost?"
The thought of DP getting lost at a new school among strangers was dreadful, so Jack put DP back in his bedroom. But he felt very lonely and frightened as he approached the school gates.
"I'm sure you'll have a lovely day,"
said Mum, hugging him before the bell rang and he had to go inside. Jack didn't say anything. He was frowning with the effort it took not to look scared. The children in his new class all stared at him. They seemed bigger than the people in his old class. The teacher spoke to him kindly and asked his name. Then she asked the rest of the class to come to the front one by one to show what they'd collected for the nature topic. Jack didn't have anything, of course, so he watched while people showed leaves, acorns and conkers to the class. Then came break time. Jack found a corner where nobody would bother him. After break, the teacher told everybody to take out their reading books. She gave one to Jack. Then she told the children that today was a special day because some older students were visiting the class. Everybody would get a partner who'd help them with their reading. The classroom door opened and in came lots of big children from the top year. They were all grinning, and a few of them waved at younger children whom they knew. Jack felt more scared than ever. One tall girl stood out from the rest. She had long black hair, which she'd tied back in a ponytail. She wasn't giggling behind her hand like a lot of the other big girls. She stood calmly while the teacher invited the older children to pick a partner. When the tall girl caught Jack's eye, he quickly examined his fingers. The big children began moving among the desks, and Jack's classmates all began whispering, "Holly! Holly! Over here, Holly!" The girl sitting beside Jack was whispering,
"Holly, Holly!"
too. When she saw Jack looking at her, the girl next to him explained,
"See her with the long black hair? That's Holly McCauley. She's a really good gymnast. She's been on TV."
"Hello,"
said a voice, a long way above Jack's head. He looked up. Holly McCauley, who'd been on TV, was looking down at him.
"You're new, aren't you?"
she said. Jack tried to say yes, but his voice wouldn't work. Everyone was staring at him, and the frantic whispers of "Holly, Holly, Holly, over here!" became louder than ever. But Holly McCauley ignored all of them. She pulled up a chair and sat down beside Jack.
"I'm going to be your partner,"
she said. It might seem strange to compare a floppy little pig to a tall 11-year-old girl who'd been on TV, but not to Jack. DP had brought him friends on his very first day at his old school, and Holly McCauley did the same for him at his new school. After just 1 hour with Holly as his reading partner, Jack was no longer the quiet new boy. He was the boy Holly McCauley had chosen. The boy Holly McCauley called,
"My mate Jack,"
when she saw him at the packed lunch table later. The rest of his class was impressed. They wanted to talk to him now. After he'd finished his sandwiches at lunchtime, a boy called Rory asked Jack if he wanted to play football. Rory knew lots of good jokes. When Mum picked Jack up at the end of the day, Rory tugged his mum over to Jack's mum, and the two mothers made arrangements for Jack to go and play at Rory's house later in the week. DP was delighted Jack had had such a good first day at his new school. He loved hearing about Holly McCauley and Rory. Of course, Jack didn't have to say anything out loud. Snuggled under the blankets, with the sound of rustling leaves just outside his window, DP knew and understood everything without being told. Jack fell asleep with DP's bean-filled body against his cheek, his familiar smell mingling with that of the new paint in Jack's room. Chapter 5. Holly's DP. All that term, Jack and Holly remained reading partners. The more he got to know her, the more he understood why his whole class wanted to be her friend. Apart from being very clever and always getting top marks and having a voice good enough to sing solos at assembly, Holly McCauley was one of the best young gymnasts in the country. She'd been on TV once and in the newspaper twice. It was her ambition to compete in the Olympic Games. Some of this she told Jack herself. The rest he heard from other people. Holly wasn't big-headed, even though she was famous. She showed Jack the bruises she got when she fell off the beam. Gymnastics sounded like very hard work. Holly told Jack how she had to win and keep winning. Even getting second place wasn't good enough. She couldn't afford to lose if she was going to get to the Olympics. Then one day, Holly appeared for their reading lesson looking strange. Her eyes were red and puffy, and when she said hello, her voice came out as a croak.
"Hello."
Even though he liked Holly very much, Jack was still a little bit shy with her.
"Did you Did you lose?
He whispered. He remembered that Holly had had a big gymnastics competition at the weekend. She shook her head.
I didn't go.
Were you ill?
Asked Jack. Again, Holly shook her head. They read another page of Jack's reading book. Then a big tear splashed onto the page.
My mum's left my dad,
whispered Holly. Sheltering behind Jack's reading book, she told him everything. Holly's mum had told her to pack a bag and then driven her away to a flat while Holly's dad was still at work at the hospital. Holly didn't know when she'd next see her dad. She missed him. He was the one who usually took her to gymnastics competitions. Her mum had explained that she didn't love Holly's dad anymore.
They both want me to live with them,
Holly told Jack in a whisper.
I don't know what to do.
After reading hour was over and Holly returned to her own class, Jack wondered what had made her tell him all those secret private things. Perhaps, he thought, he was like Holly's DP. Even though he hadn't said much, he'd understood. Chapter 6. More Changes. Jack had got used to Dad sending him postcards from all the different cities he visited for work. Mum stuck the postcards on the fridge where Jack could always see them. There was one with bridges over canals and another of a town set high in the snowy mountains. Jack spoke to Dad by phone and texted him pictures of the drawings he'd done at school and his level 4 swimming certificate. Jack loved swimming. He was one of the best in his class, so he had his 7th birthday party at the pool. Lots of his classmates came, including his best friend Rory. Before school broke up for the summer, Holly McCauley was on television for the 2nd time. She came to the front at assembly to show everyone another gold medal, and the whole school applauded and she waved and winked at Jack. Mum and Jack went away to Greece on holiday with Gran and Grandpa. DP came too. He loved the sun. His limp little body was bleached a paler shade of grey as he lay on a towel beside Jack by the pool. But Jack remembered not to bury him in the sand again. When Jack returned to school for the new year, Holly McCauley had moved up to big school. He missed seeing her, but he had lots of friends now. One evening, Gran and Grandpa came over to babysit because Mum was going out. This was strange because Mum never usually went out in the evenings. When he asked where she was going, Mum told Jack she was going out for dinner with a friend. She looked pretty. She was wearing a new dress. After that, Mum went out once a week in the evening. Jack didn't mind. He had fun with Gran and Grandpa, who played board games with him, but he always made sure to put DP up somewhere high when Toby the dog was staying the night. Then, one sunny weekend, Mum told Jack that her friend Brendan was coming over in his car and that the three of them would be going out for the day.
Is it Brendan you go to dinner with?
Jack asked. Mum said it was. Brendan turned out to be a friendly-looking man with a deep voice. He drove Mum and Jack to a country park where there was an adventure playground. Jack went down the slide and climbed up the rope net, but he wasn't really having much fun. It felt strange not having Mum to himself. After Jack had had enough of the adventure playground, the three of them went for a walk down to the river. Brendan showed Jack how to skim stones over the water. Jack would much rather it had been Dad teaching him. After Brendan had driven them home and said goodbye, Mum asked whether Jack liked Brendan. Jack said he was quite nice. They went out a lot with Brendan after that. Jack could tell that Mum really liked Brendan. Once, he came back from the swings and saw them holding hands on a bench. But Mum quickly let go when she realised Jack had seen. Beneath the blankets, DP understood everything without being told. He knew Jack felt strange about Brendan holding Mum's hand, even though Jack liked Brendan a bit more now he'd got to know him. DP understood that Jack would rather it had been his dad holding Mum's hand. DP shared Jack's worry that if Brendan stopped wanting to be Mum's friend anymore, she'd get sad again. DP was the only one Jack could tell how much he wanted things to stop changing. He never needed to pretend with DP. Chapter 7. Not Jack's Dad. Jack knew that Brendan, like Mum, had been married before, and that he had a daughter. Some weekends, Brendan didn't see Mum, because his daughter came to stay with him, and he was busy doing things with her. One day, Mum announced that the four of them were going to go to the cinema together. Mum, Jack, Brendan, and his daughter, Holly.
Holly?
Said Jack. And sure enough, there she was, Holly McCauley, taller than ever now and much older looking than Jack remembered. There was another change too. Though he was so pleased to see Holly, she didn't seem very pleased to see Jack. She was polite to Mum, but when Mum asked her about her gymnastics, Holly only said,
Yes.
And
No.
She wouldn't let Mum help her with anything. And when Mum asked her if she wanted to go to the bathroom, she said she was old enough to go by herself, thanks very much. Jack didn't like Holly being rude to his Mum. It was the first time he'd ever seen Holly be nasty to anyone. Talking it over later with DP in bed, they weren't really talking, of course, but it came to the same thing, because DP understood everything Jack thought. Jack supposed that Holly found it odd to see her dad with another lady. All the same, his Mum was lovely. Holly shouldn't talk to her like that. Nearly a year after Brendan had taught Jack to skim stones over the water, Mum said that she had something to tell Jack. She looked nervous. She was hiding her left hand on her lap.
Brendan has asked me to marry him, she said.
Oh,
said Jack. He thought for a bit.
Will he come and live with us?
Yes,
said Mum, still looking nervous.
Do you mind, Jack?
Jack liked Brendan a lot better now. Brendan had taught him to play draughts and helped him with his homework. All the same, he didn't see why they couldn't keep things as they were.
Will I have to call him Dad?
No,
said Mum.
Your dad is Dad. You can keep calling Brendan Brendan.
Do Gran and Grandpa know?
Asked Jack. He secretly hoped Gran and Grandpa might not be happy about it, but Mum said they liked Brendan very much and were glad.
Will Holly be my sister?
Your stepsister, said Mum. You like Holly, don't you?
Yes,
said Jack. It was sort of true. He'd never forgotten how kind Holly had been to him when he'd first come to school. Sometimes she was a lot of fun, but at other times she could be sharp and sarcastic. Mum said it was because she was a teenager. Mum and Brendan got married in a registry office in late summer. Jack had to wear a suit because he was the ring bearer. Holly was bridesmaid and wore a blue dress with cornflowers in her long hair. Afterwards, they all went to a restaurant. Brendan's Mum and Dad came. They were very kind to Jack and got on well with Gran and Grandpa. Everybody seemed happy, although Holly didn't talk much.
She's got a big competition next week,
said Brendan, putting his arm around Holly in her bridesmaid's dress.
We're all going to go and cheer her on.
Who's we?
Asked Holly.
Judy and Jack could come too,
said Brendan. Judy was Jack's Mum's name.
I don't want them to come,
said Holly. Her eyes had filled with tears.
I want you to come on your own, like always.
There was a little silence at the table, and then everybody talked loudly at once. Much later in the evening, one of Brendan's friends played the piano, and the grown-ups danced. Jack felt sleepy. He wanted his bed and DP. Then, Holly sat down beside him at the table. She spoke in a low, fierce voice.
He's not your dad,
she said.
He's mine. Just because he lives with you doesn't make him your dad. Understand?
Holly's expression scared Jack a bit.
Yes,
he said.
I understand.
Chapter 8. The Toilet Roll Angel. From then on, Holly spent alternate weekends at their house. Jack never knew whether she was going to be kind Holly or mean Holly. He and Mum were never allowed to watch Holly do her gymnastics. They were barely allowed to ask her how competitions went. When Holly was in a good mood, she'd play video games with Jack and football in the back garden. At other times, especially if she'd lost a competition, she could be really horrible. Once, she called him a stupid baby when she saw him cuddling DP. Jack felt ashamed, and after that, he hid DP whenever Holly was coming to stay. Brendan told Jack that Holly was having to work twice as hard to win at competitions because a new girl had moved into their area who was nearly as good as Holly. Jack tried his best not to annoy Holly when she came to spend the weekend, but it was hard to know what would set her off. When Jack had a cold, she shouted at him for sniffing during her favourite TV programme. When Brendan told her off, Holly stormed out of the room, slamming the door behind her. Brendan ran after her. After sitting on his own for a bit, Jack decided to go upstairs to his bedroom. He curled up on his bed with DP, who silently agreed that it wasn't Jack's fault he'd sniffed and that Holly had been horrible. It was nearly Christmas. School broke up. Jack was excited because he'd asked for a new bike, and so had his best friend, Rory. There was a good paved bit of play park near Rory's house, and he and Jack were planning to race their new bikes there. When Mum took out the box of Christmas decorations that year, she showed Brendan the angel that had always sat on top of their family tree. Jack had made it when he was in nursery school. The angel's body was a toilet roll. Its wings were made of card with glitter glued on, and it had a beard made of brown wool.
Angels don't have beards, said Holly scornfully when she saw Jack's creation on top of the tree.
Mum and Brendan were in the kitchen when Holly said this.
Why would anyone put an old toilet roll on a Christmas tree? My mum wouldn't put up stuff I'd made when I was a baby. She'd know I'd be embarrassed.
Jack suddenly remembered how Dad always used to say,
"And now for the finishing touch,"
and lift Jack up so he could put the toilet roll angel on the tree last of all. For a moment, Jack wanted his dad to come home so badly it gave him a pain in his chest. This was the last time Jack was going to see Holly before Christmas, because Holly's mum was taking her away to visit relatives abroad. Jack was glad. If he couldn't have Dad, at least he'd have Mum, Brendan, Gran, Grandpa and Toby the dog in a good mood, because Holly wouldn't be slamming doors and forcing the grown-ups to try and keep her happy. The day before Christmas Eve, Gran came over to look after Jack because Mum and Brendan were both at work. It had started to snow. Flakes drifted past the window while Jack watched a Christmas movie with DP on his lap. The Christmas tree lights were twinkling in the corner. Toby the dog was asleep on the floor, and Jack felt relaxed and happy. He didn't notice the taxi rolling up outside the house. The doorbell rang. Toby the dog jumped up and started barking. Jack heard Gran open the front door and then her exclamation of surprise.
Holly, what are you doing here?
Jack looked round in time to see Holly dragging a suitcase into the hall. She looked furious and her cheeks were tear-stained.
I thought you'd be on the plane by now,
said Gran.
I'm not going,
said Holly.
I want to see Dad.
But he's at work, dear,
said Gran, bewildered.
Where's your mum?
Gran peered out into the snowy front garden, but there was nobody there. Holly had come to their house alone.
I'm not going with her,
shouted Holly, and she stomped towards the stairs, dragging her heavy suitcase with her, and refused to answer any more of Gran's questions. Gran phoned Brendan, who left work early, and then Holly's mum arrived. Her name was Natalia. Jack had never met her before. He went and hid in his bedroom, but he could still hear what everyone was shouting. It seemed Holly had lost a big gymnastics competition, and her mum had told her it was because she kept missing practices, and Holly had got very angry and run away from her mum at the airport.
I suppose you encouraged this,
he heard Natalia shouting at Brendan. Natalia finally left the house, crying. Holly had refused to go with her, insisting that she wanted to spend Christmas with her dad. Jack was now very hungry, but he didn't want to go downstairs until Mum was there. By the time Mum came home, Jack was fast asleep on his bed, DP clutched in his hand. Chapter 9. Christmas Eve. Jack woke up on Christmas Eve, holding DP as usual. For a few moments, he lay quite still, thinking about the new bike he'd be getting the next day and feeling excited. He knew Mum would have already left for work and that she had to work late this evening, but she had all of Christmas Day and Boxing Day off. Then he remembered that Holly was still here. He'd only just had time to wonder what she'd find to get angry about today when there was an enormous crash from downstairs and Toby the dog started barking. Jack got up and went to see what had happened. When he entered the sitting room, he saw the Christmas tree lying on the floor beside an overturned chair. Gran was trying to catch Toby the dog, who was ferreting through the decorations in search of all the chocolate ones he shouldn't eat.
I was only trying to put my decoration on the tree,
Holly was saying, half sorry, half defiant. She was holding an ornament she'd made at school and which she'd been attempting to hang near the top. Apparently, she'd lost her balance, seized the tree and pulled it right over.
It's all right, dear,
said Gran.
No harm done.
But there was harm done. When all the baubles that weren't broken were put back on the tree, they realised that the toilet roll angel was missing. Finally, Grandpa found a few wet bits of cardboard and wool. Toby the dog had torn the angel apart.
That blasted dog,
said Grandpa. Jack knew Mum would be really upset. She loved his angel. Nobody even told Holly off.
I'll tell you what we'll do,
said Gran, trying to keep things cheerful.
We'll all drive into town and choose a new angel.
Holly could hardly refuse, seeing as it was her fault the angel had been eaten, but Jack could tell she really didn't want to go. She sat scowling on the sofa and texting her friends. When Jack went upstairs to put on his coat, he sneaked DP into his pocket. He felt the need for comfort just now. Chapter 10. The New Angel. Holly sat hunched up beside Jack in the back seat of the car, still texting all the way into town.
Look at all the snow,
said Gran cheerfully, as white flecks began to build up on the windscreen and Grandpa switched on the wipers.
Wouldn't a white Christmas be lovely?
Neither Jack nor Holly said anything. The pavements in town were covered in brown slush. Christmas music was playing in all the shops, and there was a chestnut seller on the corner. Jack held Gran's hand, with his other in his pocket, keeping hold of DP. Crowds bustled around them, all doing last-minute shopping. They went into a busy department store. There weren't many Christmas decorations left, and they looked higgledy-piggledy because shoppers were picking them up and putting them down in a hurry.
Here's a lovely angel,
said Gran, grabbing the first one she saw. Jack didn't like the angel at all. He thought she was too fancy for their tree. She wore a gaudy purple dress trimmed with gold braid and had large plastic gold wings. Jack didn't think Mum would like her either. She'd loved his toilet roll angel with the woolly beard.
What do you think of her, Holly?
Gran asked. But Holly shrugged rudely and kept looking at her phone. Gran didn't ask Jack. She led them to the checkout desk and bought the angel. Then they headed back to the car park through the cold slush and the bustling crowds. On the way back home in the car, Holly said,
I feel sick.
Maybe you should stop texting while we're in the car, dear,
said Gran. Holly rolled her eyes and pressed the button to lower the window. An icy blast filled the back of the car and flecks of snow swept inside.
I'm cold,
said Jack.
I need fresh air,
snapped Holly. They reached the motorway. Jack was now shivering. He felt miserable and angry. Why did Holly always have to have things her way?
Gran, I'm cold.
Holly, close the window a bit, please,
said Gran. Holly put the window up a fraction. Sleet and snow continued to blow into the car.
It's still wide open,
said Jack. Holly stuck out her lower lip, making a baby face, and pointed at DP, who Jack had pulled out of his pocket. Grandpa saw her do it in his rearview mirror.
Enough of that, miss,
he said.
Wind up the window, please.
Holly scowled and put the window up another bit. Then she turned to Jack stuck out her bottom lip again and pretended to be a baby, rubbing tears from its eyes. Jack didn't believe Holly really felt sick. She just wanted to be nasty. She was ruining Christmas Eve, and she'd probably ruin Christmas Day too, snapping at Jack and making herself the center of attention. She kept silently taunting him with the baby face. The hard, tight ball of anger in Jack's tummy burned suddenly red hot.
Loser,
he whispered. Holly stopped making the baby face at once.
Shut up,
she growled. Jack didn't care that he'd made her even angrier. She was ruining everything. She was rude to Mum, Gran and Grandpa. She'd come to stay when he didn't want her. It was all her fault Toby the dog had eaten his bearded angel. He wanted to punish her for spoiling Christmas, and he knew exactly how to do it. There was nothing Holly hated in the world more than losing.
Loser,
said Jack more loudly.
Jack,
said Grandpa sharply from the driver's seat.
I hope you didn't just say what I think you said.
Jack didn't answer. He could tell that Holly was on the verge of tears now, and he was glad. He was sick of her bullying. He didn't care about keeping the peace. He'd had no dinner last night because of Holly. He was tired of having to tiptoe around her. She suddenly pressed the window button, lowering it all the way to the bottom again, so that an icy gale blew through the car.
Holly,
began Gran.
I'm going to be sick,
said Holly. Jack knew she was doing it in revenge, so he did something that he'd seen people do at school. They used their thumbs and forefingers to make an L shape and held it up to their foreheads. The L stood for loser. He made the L shape, held it up, and glared at Holly. So fast that he had no hope of stopping her, Holly leaned forwards, seized DP out of Jack's lap, and threw him out of the open window. For a brief second, Jack saw DP frozen against the steely sky, his little trotters spread-eagled. Then he was whipped away out of sight. Chapter 11. Lost. Jack yelled so loudly that Grandpa swerved dangerously.
She threw DP out of the window,
bellowed Jack.
She threw DP out of the window!
But Grandpa couldn't stop in the middle of the motorway. They drove on for what seemed like ages before he was able to pull over. Holly's arms were folded. Her face was cold and set. She didn't seem to care at all about what she'd done. Once they'd stopped, Grandpa got out of the car and ran back the way they'd come, disappearing into the snow in the hope of rescuing DP.
Grandpa will find him,
said Gran. But Jack didn't believe her. He tried to get out of the car to look for DP himself, but Gran made him stay inside.
Jack, sit down.
Jack began to yell and cry. He had to have DP back. DP was the only one in the whole world who knew everything, who always cared and never changed. He needed DP. He had to have him. And DP needed Jack, because only the two of them understood each other. And now DP was lying lost on the motorway, believing Jack had left him forever. Jack kicked the back of the driver's seat, still yelling in rage, and tried to punch Holly.
Jack,
said Gran, shocked.
Calm down. We'll find DP.
A police car drew up and parked behind them. The policeman got out and came to ask Gran why they'd stopped. Gran explained and the police went away again. Still, Grandpa didn't come back. Cars whizzed past, more snow fell, and Jack looked out of the back window, sobbing. He couldn't get rid of the image of DP flying out of the car window, small and floppy and frightened, as he cartwheeled away through the air. Grandpa had to find him. He had to. But when Grandpa came back to the car, he gave a little shake of the head as he looked into Gran's eyes, then turned to Jack and said,
I'm sorry, lad. I think he's gone.
After that, Jack was shouting and crying too loudly to hear anything anyone said to him. He couldn't stand feeling the car bearing him away from the place where DP was lying, lost and bewildered, and wondering why Jack wasn't coming back for him. They drove home, with Jack pummeling his fists against the door of the car, begging to be let out so that he could go back and find DP. When he got home, Jack tried to run back up the street towards the motorway. Grandpa grabbed him and half-dragged, half-carried him into the house. Once inside, Jack ran up to his bedroom and began to throw things. He took all the toys he could reach from their shelves and threw them across the room. He ripped posters down from his walls. He pulled out drawers. He even overturned his desk.
I hate her!
Gran came upstairs.
Jack, stop it! Stop it! You're usually such a good little boy.
In answer, Jack picked up his waste paper bin and threw it at the window. He'd hoped the glass would break, but it didn't.
That's enough, young man!
Roared Grandpa, appearing in the doorway behind Gran.
You just calm down right now!
There wasn't much left to throw or break, so instead, Jack launched himself face down on his bed and refused to move or speak. At last, Gran and Grandpa left him alone. All Jack's life, when he'd gone to bed, he'd reached for DP. He seemed to feel DP right now, his limp little body, his bean-filled belly, his worn trotters, so good for wiping away tears. He could even smell DP's slightly grubby home-like whiff.
I'll find you, DP,
Jack vowed into his tear-soaked pillow.
I'll come back when they're all asleep.
After an hour, when Jack had cried all he could cry, he lay on his bed in his wrecked room and listened to the sounds of the house around him. He kept hoping to hear the front door open. If Gran phoned Mum at work and told her what had happened, she'd surely come home early. Mum understood how important DP was. She'd help him look. But the front door didn't open. Grandpa came and knocked on Jack's bedroom door at 1 o'clock and asked him if he wanted lunch. Jack shouted,
No!
A little while later, Gran came to his door and asked him if he wanted to come and see the new angel on top of the tree. Jack shouted,
No!
Even louder. Then he heard the front door open and close. For one happy moment, he thought Mum had come home early, just as he'd hoped. But instead, he heard somebody walking away down the snowy front path. He didn't care who it was or why they were going. He no longer cared about Christmas. All he cared about was DP. Chapter 12. The Christmas Pig. It was nearly tea time when he heard the garden gate creak and footsteps coming back up the path. Hoping it was Mum, he jumped up and looked out of the window. But it was only Grandpa and Holly. Not long afterwards, there was another knock on Jack's bedroom door, and it opened.
Jack,
said Grandpa.
Holly's got something she'd like to give you.
Holly's face was puffy and tear-stained. Jack sat up on his bed, staring at the brown paper bag in Holly's hand. He could think of only one thing that could make up for what she'd done. They must have gone back to the motorway to look for DP. They must have found him. For the space of a heartbeat, Jack thought that was exactly what they'd done, because when Holly put her hand in the bag, he heard the rattle of belly beans. Then hope fled. Holly had pulled out a brand new pig. It was the same size as DP and made of the same toweling material, but it was plump and smug-looking, with sleek salmon pink skin and shiny black eyes that looked like tiny beetles.
He's just the same. Look,
said Grandpa.
Holly's very sorry, Jack. She bought it out of her pocket money for you.
I am sorry, Jack,
whispered Holly.
Really, really sorry.
When Jack didn't answer, Grandpa said in a falsely jolly voice,
He's a Christmas pig, aren't you, eh?
He took the pig from Holly and made it wave a plump trotter at Jack.
See, Jack? Oh, he likes you. Now, why don't you come downstairs with us, eh? We'll have some tea and watch a movie. We'll hang up our stockings together. And don't forget your new bike, Jack. Father Christmas is probably loading it onto his sleigh right now. Oh, come on, lad. Come downstairs. Bring the Christmas pig and we'll all be friends.
Jack got slowly off the bed and held out a hand for the Christmas pig. He felt, as Jack had expected, horrible. slippery smooth instead of rough and worn. Jack hated his shiny black eyes and perky pink ears, which ought to be lopsided and grey.
There's a good boy,
said Grandpa. At these words, Jack went into his worst frenzy yet. They thought a brand new pig could be the same as DP, which showed how little they understood. DP was the only DP in the world, and this new pig was nothing. Nothing. Jack threw the Christmas pig on the floor and stamped on him. Then he picked him up, held him by a trotter, and smashed him again and again into the wardrobe, finally grabbing his head and trying to pull it off.
Jack!
Shouted Grandpa.
That's enough, Jack!
Holly ran out of the bedroom. Jack chucked the Christmas pig across the room at the wardrobe, then threw himself back onto the bed, yelling and punching his pillow. Nothing Grandpa said or did would persuade him to come downstairs. He didn't care about hanging up his stocking. He didn't want to be a good boy. He didn't want a new bike. The only thing in the world he wanted was DP. Much, much later, he heard a commotion downstairs. From what Jack overheard, Toby the dog had dragged over the tree again in search of the last bits of chocolate, and he appeared to have chewed up the new angel too. Jack was glad. If he hadn't been so sad and angry, he'd have laughed. He wished he could rip up the whole of Christmas, and then perhaps they'd all understand how he felt, knowing DP was lying lost on a motorway. Gran came upstairs and made him put on his pyjamas before bed. Jack only did it so she wouldn't realise what he was planning. He got into bed in the room he'd done his best to destroy, with the posters still screwed up on the floor, the drawers still out of the desk, and the Christmas pig lying in a heap at the foot of the wardrobe, and pretended he was going to go to sleep. At last, Gran left. The snow swirled against the blackening sky outside his window, while Jack waited for the house to fall completely silent. Normally, he'd be very excited. He'd have hung up his stocking with Mum and left out a carrot for Rudolph, but not this Christmas Eve. To be excited about any of that was to betray DP, who was more important than the whole of Christmas put together. Once everyone fell asleep, Jack was going to get up again, get dressed, sneak out of the house, return to the motorway, and find his oldest friend. Chapter 13. The Night for Miracles and Lost Causes. Jack knew that he must have fallen asleep, because he woke in pitch darkness. People were talking in his room. He supposed Gran and Grandpa had come to see whether he was all right. He kept his eyes shut because he wanted them to think he was still sleeping.
It's never been done,
said a worried voice.
I'm not sure it's possible. Of course it's possible,
said a second voice.
It all depends on the boy, on whether he's brave enough. He's very brave, but it's too dangerous,
said a third voice, which was old and croaky.
I've been there many times. I know what I'm talking about.
I've been there too,
a fourth voice.
Most of us have been there at one time or another.
I haven't,
said a fifth voice, which was slow and deep.
Well, of course you haven't,
said the first voice.
You're too big. I'm talking about us little things.
None of these people sounded familiar. Jack was starting to feel scared. Who were they? He didn't want to open his eyes in case the strangers saw that he was awake.
If it's going to be done, it's got to be done tonight,
said the second voice.
I'm waking him up.
At this, a whole chorus of voices murmured their disapproval. But Jack was more worried about the strange sensation that something was climbing up the side of his bed. He could feel it tugging at his duvet. It was small, like a kitten. He could also hear the rattling of belly beans. Then, before he could make up his mind what to do, something poked his face. Terrified, Jack slapped the poking creature away. He heard a crunching noise as it hit the wardrobe. The deep, slow voice said,
Ouch.
And the second voice said,
I've had just about enough of being hit.
Jack groped for the switch on his lamp and turned it on. Blinking, he looked around his room. There was nobody there. The Christmas pig was lying at the foot of the wardrobe. Jack knew in his heart that he'd just hit the Christmas pig. Even so, he wasn't ready to see the Christmas pig get to his feet, put his trotters on his hips and say,
"If you hit me one more time, you horrible boy, I won't help you."
Jack was so shocked and scared he couldn't move. He remembered Mum once telling him that the way to find out whether you're dreaming is to pinch yourself. He tried it on his own leg. It hurt.
"You can talk,"
whispered Jack.
"Clever, aren't you?"
said the Christmas pig crossly.
"Jack is clever,"
said the croaky voice, which was coming from a battered old matchbox car that had once belonged to Jack's dad. His hood was moving up and down as he talked, and his headlights had turned into eyes.
"Stop being nasty to him. He's been through a lot of trouble you don't know about."
"I've been through trouble too,"
said the Christmas pig.
"In case you've forgotten, he tried to pull my head off, and I'm offering to help him. On certain conditions, of course."
As if it wasn't strange enough to watch a cuddly pig and a toy car talking to each other, Jack now realised that lots of the other objects in the room had grown eyes and mouths, just like the car. The wardrobe had big brown eyes where there'd been knots of wood, and a mouth instead of a keyhole. His waste paper basket had two little eyes on tin stalks, a bit like a snail's. Some of the things had even sprouted arms, spindly metal ones on his bin and floppy woolly ones on his rug. It was sort of exciting, but mostly terrifying.
"You've got to warn him how dangerous it will be,"
the matchbox car was telling the Christmas pig.
"Otherwise he can't know what he's getting into."
There was a murmur of agreement from all the things in the room.
"I didn't know,"
said Jack, finding his voice at last.
"I didn't know things could talk."
What he really meant to say was, "I didn't know you could feel." He'd been very rough with these things earlier, and none more so than the Christmas pig.
"We can only talk in the land of the living tonight because it's a special night,"
said the Christmas pig.
"You know what night it is, don't you?"
"Christmas Eve,"
said Jack.
"Exactly,"
said the Christmas pig.
"And that means there's a chance, just for one night we couldn't do it any other time, that we can get your pig back."
"I know,"
said Jack, throwing back his duvet, which was one of the few things in the room that hadn't sprouted eyes and wasn't talking.
"I'm going to the motorway."
"That won't work,"
said the Christmas pig.
"DP's in the land of the lost now, and if you want to save him, you'll have to go and find him there and come home together."
"There's no such place as the land of the lost,"
said Jack scornfully.
"You're making that up."
At that, most of the things in his room began to talk at once. The box of tissues, both his slippers, and even the lampshade he'd brought to the new house from his old bedroom. It was extremely confusing and scary, and Jack didn't know whether he was more frightened of all these noisy things waking up Gran and Grandpa, who'd stop him going outside to find DP, or of the things themselves.
"I'll explain,"
croaked the matchbox car. And even though he was one of the smallest things in the room, all the other things fell silent. Perhaps because he was one of the oldest. The car moved forward on his rusty wheels and spoke directly to Jack.
"The land of the lost is where things go when you lose them,"
he said.
"It's a strange and terrible place, governed by its own peculiar laws. I've been there many times because you and your dad lost me so often."
"Sorry,"
said Jack nervously. It was true that he'd often forgotten where in the garden he had last played with the little car, which was why he was chipped and rusty.
"You always found me in the end,"
said the car.
"And so, thank goodness, the loser never got me."
"The who?"
asked Jack.
"The loser,"
the car repeated.
"He rules the land of the lost. He's the reason things fall out of pockets when you thought they were secure. He's the one who befuddles your mind so that you forget where you last put your pen. The loser would like to suck every single thing that belongs to humans down into his kingdom forever. He hates the living, and he hates their things, which he tortures and eats."
"The loser's going to eat DP,"
whispered Jack in terror.
Not as long as DP abides by the laws of the Land of the Lost,
said the car.
It's those who defy the law that the loser's allowed to catch and eat. Unfortunately, the loser makes the laws, and he sometimes cheats.
I've got to rescue DP,
said Jack at once.
How do I get to this Land of the Lost?
You can't, or at least not alone,
said the Christmas pig.
You're human, and it's a land of things. That's how it usually works anyway. But Christmas Eve is a night for miracles and lost causes. If you love DP enough to risk your life, then I'm ready to take you with me into the Land of the Lost. And we'll see whether we can bring him home again.
I do love him enough,
said Jack at once.
I love him enough for anything.
All right then,
said the Christmas pig.
I'll help you on one condition. After we've found DP and brought him home, I want you to return me to the girl who bought me.
Why?
Asked Jack.
Because I like her,
said the Christmas pig.
She didn't stamp on me.
The old matchbox car began to say something, but the Christmas pig threw him a nasty look, and the car fell silent.
She won't take me back unless she knows you're happy with DP. So, do we have a deal?
Deal,
said Jack at once. He didn't like the Christmas pig, but knew that he needed him.
You should put something on instead of pyjamas,
said the Christmas pig.
And take your slippers.
But Jack wasn't going to be bossed around by the new pig. And in any case, it felt too weird to put his feet in things that were blinking at him. So he said,
I'm comfy as I am. Now take me to the Land of the Lost.
Chapter 14. Shrunk. The moment he spoke those words, Jack felt a strange sensation in the pit of his stomach. It was as though he was travelling downwards, fast in a lift. At the same time, the bed and the sheets beneath him began to grow so rapidly that he lost sight of the floor. In a panic, he tried to stand up, but he tripped over a wrinkle in the sheet and fell flat on his face. Several seconds later, Jack realised that the bed hadn't grown at all. He'd shrunk. When he succeeded in standing up again, he saw that the creases in the sheets seemed like giant snowdrifts. It was very scary to think you could shrink like this, just by saying a few words. And Jack was very glad that his duvet didn't seem to have come alive, because it could have smothered him to death if it had wanted to. The Christmas pig's voice called up to him from the floor.
Slide down the corner of the duvet,
he said.
Come on, it's quite easy.
This wasn't true. However, Jack did his best, and after a frightening descent, which involved a big drop to the floor at the bottom, he finally landed beside the Christmas pig. They were now exactly the same size, 8 inches tall.
Well, goodbye, everybody,
said the Christmas pig, and he began to march towards Jack's bedroom door.
Nice meeting you.
Some of the things in the bedroom tried to call them back.
Think,
said a little plastic shark that Jack had bought at the Sea Life Centre, flapping its fins on the floor.
Think about what you're doing, pig.
I have thought, thank you,
said the Christmas pig, leaning against the bottom of the door, which bounced open.
No living child has ever entered the Land of the Lost,
wept a little robot Jack had once got free with a burger, and which he'd earlier thrown at the wall.
There's a first time for everything,
said the Christmas pig, as he and Jack walked out onto the landing.
Jack, he's not telling you that...
began a pair of pants, which had fallen out of one of Jack's drawers. But the Christmas pig had placed his trotters beneath the door, where there was an inch of space, and tugged it shut again.
Very boring things you have,
he told Jack.
Come on.
Thinking how rude the Christmas pig was, and that he and Holly deserved each other, Jack followed the pig to the top of the stairs and copied him as he began lowering himself off each step onto the next. The banisters were as tall as skyscrapers now that Jack was so small. They cast frightening shadows across the boy and the pig as they descended.
Why aren't the stairs talking?
Jack asked as he dropped from one to the next.
Why didn't my duvet?
Some things aren't awake enough to talk, even on Christmas Eve,
said the Christmas pig.
Is your duvet new?
Yes,
said Jack.
Then it won't have had many of your feelings put into it yet. That's what wakes things up. Being used and absorbing human feelings. Things like stairs and walls are taken for granted by humans, so they hardly ever get wakened.
But you're new,
said Jack.
And you're very awake.
A bit too awake, Jack thought privately. But he didn't say that out loud.
I'm a special case,
said the Christmas pig. And Jack thought this sounded boastful and not at all the kind of comment DP would make, because DP never showed off.
Now we need to decide where the best place to get lost is,
said the Christmas pig.
It's harder than you might think when you're trying to do it on purpose. Any ideas?
Is that all we have to do to get there?
Asked Jack.
Get lost?
Of course, but it'll be hard because I expect you know this house very well.
It might be easier in the garden,
said Jack.
Especially now I'm small. We could drag a chair to the back door, climb up to the lock and open it.
Good idea,
said the Christmas pig. They just reached the bottom of the stairs.
Which way?
Jack led the Christmas pig down the dark hallway towards the kitchen. The hall seemed vast when you were only 8 inches tall. One good thing was the big gap beneath the door into the kitchen. He and the Christmas pig got down on their bellies and wriggled through.
Excellent,
said the Christmas pig.
Now, if we can just push the chair over to...
But he never finished the sentence. A gigantic four-legged beast had risen up in front of them. A monster with long yellow teeth, shaggy fur and gleaming eyes. With a deep bark, the monster launched itself at the Christmas pig, skidding on the lino and almost catching the pig between its dangerous jaws.
Run! Run!
Cried the Christmas pig, sprinting back towards the door. Jack followed, Toby the dog's smelly breath hot on the back of his neck, his claws scrabbling on the floor. Together, Jack and the Christmas pig threw themselves onto their tummies and dived back under the door into the hall.
You should have said there was a dog,
panted the Christmas pig, as he and Jack lay there catching their breath.
I forgot,
said Jack.
He doesn't usually live here.
Toby the dog was whining and scratching on the kitchen side of the door, trying to reach them.
It'll have to be the front door instead,
said the Christmas pig, picking himself up and dusting himself off.
Come on.
But at that moment, Toby the dog hurled himself against the kitchen door with such force that it burst open. Jack and the Christmas pig pelted back down the hall, Toby the dog slipping and sliding on the wooden floorboards behind them. He chased them into the dark sitting room, so Jack and the pig dived under the sofa. Toby the dog's shiny